Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston. Bread for the
Broken. You got this beautiful gospel message that's going out, and part of that is it's just this freedom that, like, man, it's just Jesus. He is more than enough. And he loves you, and he cares about you, and he died for you, and he rose from the grave from you. They got to go around to the different regions sharing again. They had already shared the gospel there, but they got to back that up with everybody's on board with this. It's not Jesus plus this. That's nonsense. It's just Jesus.
With all the struggle and hurt in the world, people are looking for answers. They're looking for hope. Today, Pastor James reminds you that you can find what you need in the person of Jesus. He's more than enough for whatever you're dealing with. The good news of the gospel is that Jesus came to rescue you and make you a part of his family. When you admit that you've messed up and that you can't fix yourself, Jesus is there. He loves you, and he wants to help you live in the freedom that he died to give you. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts chapter 16 with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
All right, so Acts chapter 16, when we last left off, Paul and his buddy Barnabas, they were missionary journey number one, partners going all over, planting churches and causing a ruckus in the world, so to speak. You get to the end of chapter 15, and there's a split that happens between Paul and Barnabas, okay? Barnabas wants to take John Mark with them. John Mark was with them on the first journey, but he kind of chickened out, is what we'd say, right? He bailed right when it was getting started. It got too hard for him, so he took off. But now Barnabas is like, no, I think he's ready, so let's take him along with us on this journey. And Paul's like, I don't think so. He's like, you know what it was like the first time? Paul was the one who was nearly stoned to death, okay? So Paul understands just how dangerous it was going to be. And the last thing he needed was somebody who was unreliable on the mission, okay? So Paul's like, absolutely not. So who's right, who's wrong? Well, it doesn't matter, okay? So Paul went his way, and Barnabas went his way with John Mark, and the word still got out, okay? The word still went forth, and whether it was to the Cyprus there or if it was with Paul and Silas and Timothy, as we're going to see, the word is still going out, okay? And still going out, and you know, there was no real love loss to a certain degree. And later on in Paul's life, he welcomes Mark and says he's absolutely beneficial to me. So that's an encouragement for maybe like you. Maybe you flaked out on the Lord. Maybe you're like you bailed on him when it got tough. Well, good news is that there's always a chance to come back. There's always a chance to come back because I can tell you this: there may be some Apostle Pauls in your life who are like, I don't think so, right? You know, and we've all had that experience. I've probably communicated that to some people who've bailed on me. I probably have had that communicated to me by rebelling on some people. But I could tell you this, the Lord Jesus never responds that way to us. He's just patiently waiting. Like, yeah, I know you're not strong enough. I know you're not tough enough. I know you can't handle it, but I'll wait on you. I'll keep waiting on you. If you just follow me, if you just take my yoke upon you, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. So the Lord is always good about that. So I want to encourage you guys just right up front that if you feel like, man, I feel like I'm a, maybe I'm not a Barnabas in that story, maybe I'm not a Paul, maybe I'm a John Mark, like I just chickened out, like I just couldn't cut it. Well, the Lord's not done with you. The Lord's not done with you, okay? So you can always come back. You can always be effective. The Lord's never done with you, all right? Chapter 16, this is the start of the second missionary journey, and there'll be a third one right after this, and there's not really a whole lot of gap in between those two, but this is where we pick up. So Paul, he's got to get a new team, and it tells us, at the end of chapter 15 that he grabs Silas, but there's still one guy short. So look at verse 1, chapter 16. I'm going to read from New King James. It says, then he came back to Derbe and to Lystra, that's Paul, And behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed. She was a believer, but his father was Greek. So you got a Jewish lady and a Gentile guy. They get married and they have a baby. His name is Timothy. All right. So here's Timothy, and Paul would speak, concerning the faith of Timothy's mom and also Timothy's grandmother. They were believers, and they were very influential in the life of Timothy. So again, for you moms, for you grandmas, thank you so much for loving your kids and pointing them to Jesus, because that makes a difference. It matters. And it especially matters for an Apostle Paul who needs to take somebody along on a mission trip. It really helps him out to have somebody he can count on. And that's Timothy. So his dad's Greek. Says he was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium, and Paul wanted to have him go with him. Okay, so there's a thought there that maybe Timothy heard Paul preach when he first went through this region, and that's when he got saved. Nobody knows. I'm going to tell you that right now. Nobody knows. There's a really good chance that he just got saved in his house because mom and grandma kept witnessing Jesus to him. I tend to go more in that direction. And then when the Apostle Paul came through, Timothy's like, I want to be like that dude. Like, this guy's nuts. This guy's crazy. This dude's on fire for Jesus. I want to be like that guy. However he got saved doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is this guy got saved, okay? He got saved. And he's well spoken of. All the people within his community are like, man, Timothy's awesome. Timothy's a great kid. You should take Timothy with you. But Timothy's got a problem. It's not really a problem, but Paul's going to, he wants to address this, so to speak. It says Paul wanted him to go with him. He took him and circumcised him because the Jews who were in that region, for they all knew that his father was Greek, and were like, well, hold on. We just went through the book of Galatians where Paul emphatically said, you don't have to be circumcised. So what's the deal with this contradiction? It's not a contradiction. It's not. Paul's dealing with Timothy. Timothy's a Jew. I know his dad's Gentile, but his mom is Jew, and everybody who knows Timothy and his family, they know Timothy is a Jewish kid. Paul knew that this would be a hindrance in their mission. He knew it would be a hindrance in their mission. And he did not force Timothy to get circumcised, but he probably strongly suggested to Timothy, like, look, dude, everybody knows your story. They all know your story. So in order for us to be as effective as we possibly can, I'm going to suggest to you that you get circumcised. Timothy is a grown man at this point in time. You know, to a certain extent, it's like, maybe I need to rethink my calling in life. No. Why? Because what matters the most? The gospel. The gospel. And the Apostle Paul was willing to become all things to all men so that some might get saved. Timothy was willing to become all things to all men so that some might get saved. This is not a law thing. This is not they're trying to uphold the law or anything like that. This is Paul saying, look, Timothy, everybody knows you're a Jewish kid. You need to get circumcised. You need to get circumcised or it will stand in your way. It will be a hindrance. And Timothy went for it. People come to this and this causes drama. What I want you to understand or what you want you to see is that nowhere within there do you see Timothy complaining. Not at all. Timothy says, okay, so this would keep me from having an audience to tell people about the gospel? Let's handle it. Let's handle it. To the Jews, I become a Jew. To the Gentiles, I become a Gentile. You know, I mean, it's that mindset, that philosophy of like, listen, I'm whatever it takes. I mean, Get circumcised. Now, you'll know from Galatians chapter 2 concerning Titus was a Gentile. And that's why Paul said, I'm not making Titus get circumcised. He's a Gentile. The people who were wanting Titus to get circumcised, it was all because they were tacking circumcision onto salvation, saying he can't be truly saved unless he's circumcised because he's a Gentile. And Paul says, that's not true. Nope. Timothy is a disciple, a believer, and he's not circumcised when it calls them that, okay? So circumcision does not matter. It doesn't matter. The only circumcision that matters, and we've said this repeatedly, is that of your heart. Is that of your heart. So there's no contradiction here. Once you understand, like, Timothy's a Jewish kid, he needed to be circumcised. It was going to prevent him from having an audience, prevent him from going into certain places and all that. Titus, who's a Gentile, did not need to be circumcised. He didn't need to be circumcised. They were trying to put that on him of like, well, you're not saved until you do so. Timothy was just, it was going to be an issue. And so Paul brought that up and Paul took Timothy and he got him circumcised. And the journey goes on and the journey goes on, right? It may have, you know, they may have had to take a break for a couple of days, which is understandable, right? You pour Timothy, get Timothy, let him rest and recover. And then you got to get back onto the mission. Verse 4. And as they went through the cities there, this whole region, and we'll tell you all the names and stuff like that, but they're going back through visiting the churches. So they're visiting different cities. It says they delivered to them the decrees to keep. Well, what decrees were there? Well, Acts chapter 15. Remember, the whole council got together and said, do people need to get circumcised in order to be saved? And the conclusion they came to was, no, you don't have to be circumcised. Then what? How does somebody get saved? Jesus. Surrender to Jesus. That's it. That's it. Now, there were some things that the Gentiles needed to start practicing, to stop practicing and start practicing a new way. Basically, holiness. Stop eating meat sacrificed to idols. Stop, you know, with messing with the blood and all that good stuff, the sexual immorality. Stop all that stuff. It's time for separation, distinction, holiness. You have to live this way now. That's the decrees. And so Paul and Silas and Timothy are going around to each church saying, hey, here's good news. Here's this letter. All the leaders of the church, not that it really mattered to a certain extent, because all the churches are autonomous, basically. It's not like Peter is the pastor over all the churches, because he's not. And it's not like James, who is like the main guy in Jerusalem, he's not the pastor of all the churches, because he's not. He was the pastor of whatever church God had placed him. If Peter was a pastor of any church, it was only where God had placed him. It does not mean that he gets to rule this whole thing called Christianity. He's not the first pope. There's no biblical precedence for that. There's not one guy who oversees all stuff. That's not how it works. Okay? I hope you understand that. The body of Christ, there's lots of different churches and all that good stuff, and the Lord appoints individuals, whether it's a pastor for sure, to shepherd that flock, and then also a team of leaders or elders, as we call them, to help with the spiritual direction of those churches. They're all autonomous. We're Calvary Chapel Galveston. I don't answer to Ron Hint, okay? I don't answer. Chuck Smith is gone. He passed away. I don't answer. If he was around, I don't answer to Chuck Smith. We're Calvary Chapel Galveston. Now, we're part of that family, but the Lord is expecting James Grizzle to shepherd the flock that he's entrusted to him. He's the only one I care about in that sense. Now, I'm accountable to Ron Hint. I'm accountable to Bill Gimm, my sending pastor. I'm accountable to those guys. I place myself under their accountability for sure, because hopefully if I've learned anything, I want to be a smart man, okay? I want to have some accountability within my life. But when it comes down to it, when I stand before the Lord, he's not going to be like, okay, hold on, let me pull Ron Hinn in here real quick. Let me pull Chuck. Chuck, where are you at? Chuck, come over here. This guy was a pastor of your churches, of one of your churches. It's not Chuck Smith's church. Calvary Chapel, Galveston, it's not even James Grizzle's church. This belongs to Jesus. And I will account for what I did with it while he had me here, right? So there's no, like, I know that there's sometimes this notion that, like, well, you know, guys got together in Jerusalem to try to work through this issue, and how are we going to address this? That's smart. That's intelligent. That's what you want. When there's an issue within the church world, what you want is believers to be able to come together and say, okay, let's intelligently think through this. Let's prayerfully think through these things. How do we answer some of these complications? You want to handle it that way. Because the last thing you want, too, is if there's an issue within the church, well, it just really comes down to one guy. And what does that one guy say? No, we don't We don't really want that either. We want, there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors, okay? So the leaders got together, prayerfully considered the circumcision issue and all that good stuff, and they were praying through this, and they were keeping in tune with what the word has already said, and they came up with this letter that says, this is what we need to spread to all the churches concerning circumcision. It's not necessary. This was the good news that they were spreading around the churches. And so as they're going from city to city, they get to share this good news with these guys, saying, hey, look, there is one way to heaven, and his name is Jesus. And you can come as you are, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you've done, you know. It doesn't matter what percentage of your life was lived as an enemy of his. None of that matters. What matters is surrender to Jesus, period. It's as simple as that. It's as beautiful as that. Or does that mean some wild, crazy murderer can, on his deathbed, surrender his life to Jesus and go to heaven? Yeah? You got a problem with that? Because this murderer surrendered to Jesus. I just happened to do it at 19. You're a murderer? Yeah, if you hate somebody in your heart, you're a murderer. That's what Jesus said. Guilty. I was guilty of that. And a whole list of other things. So what? I got saved when I was 19. So what if somebody gets saved on their deathbed? It's not your business. That's between them and Jesus. Now, we have a hard time rationalizing that. We have a really difficult time trying to figure out, well, how does that work? Your job, your business, is to be about the gospel. Your job is to be about communicating this beautiful gospel message to anybody and everybody and letting them know you are not disqualified. You are not disqualified. If anybody dies apart from that, it was their own doing. It's their own choosing. That's what it comes down to. But you got this beautiful gospel message that's going out, and part of that is just this freedom that, like, man, it's just Jesus. He is more than enough. And he loves you, and he cares about you, and he died for you, and he rose from the grave from you. They got to go around to the different regions sharing again. They had already shared the gospel there, but they got to back that up with everybody's on board with this. It's not Jesus plus this. That's nonsense. It's just Jesus. It's good news. It's good news. So they're going around the cities, they're delivering these decrees to these guys, it says, which were determined by the apostles and the elders at Jerusalem, that's chapter 15. So the churches, here's the result. The churches were strengthened in the faith and increased in numbers daily. Well, that seems like the best way to grow a church. It's the gospel. It's the gospel. There's a, listen, and you guys know, I mean, I'm, you know, submerged in this church world thing just because of my position, but there is no shortage of books telling me how to grow a really big church. And I've read some of them. And there's a lot of smart strategies that are out there. They're really good. Some of them are written by pastors. Some of them are written by business people, okay? But there's a lot of information. I was just reading an article this morning before I showed up today telling me how to grow a really big church, even in the midst of a pandemic. I'm like, really? That's cool. Now, the guy that wrote the article is a brother. I love this guy. He's a tremendous guy. And I get where he's coming from and all that stuff. Not all those are bad things. Hear me out. They're not all bad, right? They're not. But you can't. I don't want a church that's super big because we created some cool programs. I'm not interested in that. I don't want a church that's packed out because we somehow figured out how to, like, advertise just right in order to get a bunch of people in here. Now, I'm not opposed to a bunch of people coming in here because they're going to hear what you've been hearing for the past 4 or 5 years, the Word of God. But I'm not interested in trying to create some sort of thing of, like, let's just get them in, let's get them in, let's build up this thing. I'm not interested in that. What I am interested in is communicating the gospel, and that not just myself, but us as a congregation are on mission for Jesus and you within your community and your little sphere of influence, whether that's at your workplace or your neighborhood, you're just sharing Jesus with people and they're getting saved. And if they come here, sweet. If they don't come here, cool. Hopefully they get plugged in somewhere else because there's still a lot of cool churches around. Even in Galveston, there's a lot of sweet churches in Galveston that are they're all about Jesus. They don't all have to come here. In fact, I don't want them all to come here. But the ones who the Lord does bring here, I just want us to be on mission. Just want us to be on mission. What you see modeled in the book of Acts is really what we want to see happening here in Galveston and the surrounding regions. That's all we want. Not so that Calvary Galveston becomes the next big thing. We don't want to be the next big thing. We want Jesus to remain the biggest thing because it's not about us. It's not. These guys are going around. They're just encouraging them. They're sharing the gospel, and they're encouraging them by way of the unity that they have as the church. They came together to clarify some of this stuff, and there's encouragement that's there, and people are receiving the word, and the churches are growing. They're growing. It says they're increasing in number daily, but not just numerically, but they're growing spiritually. It says that they're being strengthened in the faith. That's another way of saying they're spiritually healthy. They're spiritually healthy. And that healthy, that's what you want. As a church, that's numero uno, spiritually healthy church. Because spiritually healthy churches should be growing numerically. That's the other thing. We don't want to remain small, okay? You might be one of those people who are like, I want the church to stay small. I don't agree with you. I don't agree with you because that's not biblical. That's not biblical either. You want the church to grow. You want it to grow spiritually, yes, but you also want it to grow numerically. You want that to happen too. And when it grows to a certain point, then it's like, okay, well, we need to rethink this. It's time for half of us to go somewhere else and start another church. Because Calvary Galveston doesn't have to be, we're not the answer. We're part of the answer, but we're not the answer, right? And this beautiful Texas coastline is in need of a lot of other good, healthy churches. So we don't want to stay small. And I know sometimes that's the thing. It's like, I want to stay small because in a small church, I know everybody and all that stuff. That's not always a good thing, okay? That's not always a good thing. But you want it to grow. You want it to grow, and then you want home fellowships to be a part of what you're doing. You want other church plants to be a part of what you're doing because the Lord is blessing and the Lord is adding to the body. That's always been our kind of mindset. It's always been our mindset. If that's what the Lord has for us, then sweet. That's cool. If that's not what he has for us, sweet. That's cool. Because guess what? It's not mine. It's his. It's his, right? So let God do with Calvary Galveston whatever he wants to do. We pray, and you can pray for me, that I'm just smart enough to hear his voice and to trust him and to submit to him. That's how you can be praying for me. Because I need that. Because I'm a stubborn guy. I'm super hard-headed. I don't know if you know that. If you didn't spend any time talking to my wife, she'll probably let you know that. I'm very determined. I'm very stubborn. I don't give up. I quit. I don't even know what that word means, right? Quit. I don't know what that means. And that's a problem. And we'll see that the Apostle Paul is kind of like that. He's kind of like that. Hopeless, hopeless,
pray for the broken. That's all we have time for today at Bread for the Broken, but we're so glad that you joined us as Pastor James continues through the book of Acts. This book is a powerful representation of how the church first began. It contains a variety of snapshots into effective ways of sharing the gospel. Some apostles shared in large groups, while others taught in more intimate settings. Some taught the gospel through words, and others shared through signs and wonders. Do you wrestle with sharing who Jesus is? Be encouraged. As long as you're teaching the hope and truth of Jesus, there is no wrong way. If you'd like prayer in this area, we would love to pray for you. Visit breadforthebroken.com, click on the contact tab, and let us know how we can be praying. If you'd like to listen to more teachings like this, you can find them too when you visit breadforthebroken.com. Just click on the teachings tab. You'll also be able to learn more about Calvary Galveston at our website, as well as find directions to our location. Calvary Galveston is a church of ordinary people seeking to live as Jesus did. We meet every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. So if you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to meet you. Our atmosphere is relaxed, so just come as you are. You can find out more and get directions on our website. Again, that's breadforthebroken.com. Thanks for listening to Pastor James's teaching today. Know that we're praying for you, and we hope you'll join us to continue digging into the book of Acts next time on Bread for the Broken.
Let me paint the picture of you.